You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vanderweel.
And I'm Ron Bronson. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, May 17th, 2018.
It is the number one infectious killer in the United States. It kills more people than the next top 10 infectious diseases combined.
Indianapolis declared a public health emergency in Marion County today. The Marion County Health Department issued a statement calling for a syringe exchange program to be set up in the county due to an epidemic of hepatitis C cases. In today's feature report, we'll hear from Indiana Recovery Alliance Director Chris Abert. He is currently in the nation's capital to counsel legislators on hepatitis C prevention. That's coming up later in the program on today's feature report.
Construction projects from the state's work on I-69, Monroe County improvements to South Walnut Street, and Bloomington and IU's renovations of roads in town. Residents are sitting in traffic more and more. In this week's edition of Voices in the Street, we ask about your drive time commutes. But first, your daily headlines.
The United States Senate voted yesterday to uphold net neutrality. Net neutrality is the principle that internet service providers should enable access to all content on the World Wide Web without favoring or slowing down particular websites. Earlier this year, the Federal Communications Commission voted to repeal net neutrality, which would allow internet service providers like Comcast and AT&T to charge customers for so-called preferred access to websites and streaming services. The repeal of net neutrality met with criticism and protest from both voters and major corporations such as Google and Facebook. In a statement today, Senator Joe Donnelly expressed his support for the Senate's vote in favor of reversing the FCC's decision to repeal net neutrality.
I believe all Hoosiers should have access to the content of their choice, and I was proud to join my colleagues to vote for an open internet, and am pleased the Senate passed this common sense measure. From small businesses to entrepreneurs to Hoosier families to Hoosier farmers, the internet is critical to Indiana and our country's economy. It's a powerful tool for innovation, communication, research, and the robust exchange of information.
The vote to repeal the FCC's decision was 52 in favor and 47 opposed. The repeal of net neutrality will continue on as planned despite the vote from the Senate. Without similar votes from the House representatives and a signature from the president, net neutrality be struck down next month.
Last month, Planned Parenthood and the American Civil Liberties Union filed a lawsuit against the state of Indiana. Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky and the ACLU say Indiana legislation requiring physicians to disclose patient information to the State Department of Health is unconstitutional. WFHB John Chester brings us that report.
A hearing date has been set for a lawsuit between Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky and the state of Indiana. The suit concerns a piece of legislation passed by the Indiana General Assembly during this year's legislative session that requires abortion providers to submit a report whenever a woman seeks post-abortion medical attention. The report would include details such as the race of the patient, information on the patient's menstrual cycle, and the date and type of abortion provided. The aggregate information will then be analyzed and provided to the Centers for Disease Control. The bill, Senate Enrolled Act 340, would penalize abortion providers who refuse to turn over the information with criminal penalties and possible jail time. Kenneth Falk is the legal director for the American Civil Liberties Union of Indiana, which is representing Planned Parenthood in the case. He spoke with WFHB when the case was filed late last month.
This is unconstitutional. The statute is vague because it's unclear exactly what is or is not a complication. It also sets up different regulatory and statutory requirements, for abortion clinics and other medical practitioners, which violate the equal protection as well. And ultimately, it's not rational. If you look through the list of abortion, quote-unquote, complications, you'll see that most of them have nothing to do with abortions and are going to occur if at all, regarding other procedures which do not have to do any recording.
U.S. District Court Judge Richard Young will preside over the trial, which is scheduled to begin June 8th in Evansville. Young will hear preliminary arguments from state lawyers and ACLU attorneys. In preliminary court filings, the ACLU argues that the new bill violates the Equal Protections Clause of the 14th Amendment. It would place additional restrictions and regulations on abortion providers that would not be required of general medical facilities.
Hospitals, abortion clinics, and ambulatory surgical centers have always been lumped together, and they have been allowed to be inspected every other year. This law now uniquely targets abortion clinics, requiring annual inspections. And again, there's no indication why a higher standard should be applied to abortion clinics than those other health facilities.
The suit also alleges that the bill is written too broadly and that the vagueness of the bill, quote, offends due process, unquote. The new law, unless struck down by Young, is set to take effect July 1st. For WFHB, I'm Jonah Chester.
Yesterday, the Environmental Protection Agency announced its opening a Superfund fight in the town of Spencer, Indiana, just northwest of Ellettsville. The EPA found the dry cleaning chemical tetrachloroethylene in high concentrations in Spencer's groundwater. Tetrachloroethylene, also called PCE, is cancerous in humans and has been linked to an increased risk of Parkinson's disease. Superfund sites are designated by the EPA as an environmental emergency due to pollution. Owen County Health Department Environmental Officer John Reeves says, for the most part, Spencer residents have known about the groundwater contamination.
This has been public around here for quite some time, and quite frankly, I don't get phone calls on it. I think last year I had one phone call. Somebody was thinking about buying an empty business building here. So there's been no any kind of panic or alarm or anything like that, you know, up to now anyway.
Reeves says the EPA, Indiana Department of Environmental Management, and the Owen County Health Department are collaborating. The Superfund site remediation plan has yet to be determined. The EPA has identified now impossible sources of the chemical being leached into the groundwater.
You know, it's hard to say. Like the article said, they haven't even really identified the contamination site yet, or the source of the contamination, I should say. And so, you know, it's kind of just going to have to take it a day at a time and see what they come up with. You know, if there's immediate actions that we have to do as the local health department, we'll certainly take those steps. But right now, they're not identified.
PCE is not soluble in water and tends to sink, which may further complicate cleanup efforts of Spencer's groundwater. The town is located along the White River. Reeves says the chemical is yet to be detected in local water delivered to customers, but the EPA stated as many as 9,000 residents in Owen County may be affected.
A fungal disease lethal to snakes has been found in southern Indiana, according to a new report by the Indiana Department of Natural Resources. The disease poses no risk to humans, but it can cause facial swelling, disfigurement, scale and skin lesions, internal lesions, and death in certain snake species. A team of researchers at the University of Illinois discovered the disease during field research late last year. The team collected samples in 10 Indiana counties and found the disease in almost all of them. Further research will be conducted later this year. How the disease spreads is currently unknown, but it is theorized to have spread through contact with soil, other infected snakes, or from mother to offspring. The disease has also been discovered to affect the eastern Massasauga rattlesnake, an endangered species located in northern Indiana. The long-term effects on Indiana snake populations, including the Massasauga, is currently unknown.
The Monroe County Community School Corporation is considering implementing a 3-year plan for dual language immersion at the elementary school level. Summit and Clear Creek elementary schools already offer instruction in Spanish and English in select kindergarten and first grade classes. But Dr. Deborah Prenkert, Director of Elementary Education, says the long-term goal is to support foreign language learning for all elementary students.
And this would mean that we would be adding world languages at the elementary level, Next year, I have Clear Creek and Summit listed here because right now, only if you're in the dual language immersion are you really getting the foreign language opportunity. And again, we want everybody to have some exposure. So we would be adding Clear Creek and Summit and then Arlington Heights and Highland Park. And then you can see in the 1920 school year, we would continue to add more schools, Fairview and Grandview and Binford and Rogers. And then the 2021 year, adding Marlin and Unionville and Lakeview.
Prenker presented the proposal in last week's MCCSC board meeting. She said the schools would have to share two full-time language teachers so all grades could have language instruction.
So depending on the number of sections of grade, you know, that you have at each school, it equates to everybody kindergarten through sixth grade getting somewhere between 25, 30 minutes at least a week of foreign language instruction.
MCCSC high school students can choose from six different languages through the World Languages Program. School board member Sue Wanzer asked Prenker about the elementary language offerings.
What languages will we be teaching in those elementary schools?
So right now, for Clear Creek and Arlington Heights and Highland Park for next year, we're proposing Spanish. And the reason, obviously, the Clear Creek and Summit already have the dual language component, so mm-hmm. it would make sense then that they could converse with their classmates. Okay. So the proposal for the 18-19 would be for in the area of Spanish. And then in the future, 19-20, 20-21, we can always survey the community or the school to see.
Prenker says foreign language immersion fits with the school system's mission to, quote, empower students to become productive, responsible, global citizens, end quote. She says it also increases the school system's cultural competency. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Ron Bronson.
And I'm Carolyn Vanderweel. Support for WFHB is provided by attorneys Eric Slotograph and Ben Neoff. Slotograph Neoff is located at 200 East 3rd Street in downtown Bloomington, assisting families and small businesses in meeting the legal challenges of life, providing estate planning and wills, as well as family law services. More information is available at 812-332-6000 or at slotographlegal.com. Slotograph Neoff, law for business, community, and life.
The Marion County Health Department, which serves Indianapolis, announced a hepatitis C emergency today. The health department is looking at putting in place a syringe exchange program to combat the spread of hepatitis C, which kills more Americans than any other infectious disease, according to the CDC. Monroe County's syringe exchange program is operated by the Indiana Recovery Alliance. The nonprofit organization and the Indiana Harm Reduction Coalition are in Washington, D.C. today to educate representatives and senators about the opioid epidemic. In today's feature report, WFHB News Director Wes Martin speaks with the Indiana Recovery Alliance founder and director, Chris Aberthy, about hepatitis C in Indiana.
I'm Chris Aberthy. I'm the director of the Indiana Recovery Alliance. We're a frontline organization dealing with all aspects of the current opioid syndemic. And by syndemic, I mean not only the tragedies that ensue from opiate use and the attendant criminalization, but also hepatitis C, HIV, and fatal overdose. So we've been in existence for 3 or 4 years now, and I'm currently in Washington, D.C. today. It's May, is Hepatitis Awareness Month, and there is a group of us who are here through Caring Ambassadors, and the group includes the CDC, and the National Governors Association, and National Viral Hepatitis Roundtable, and various other community-based organizations and health departments to do health visits and advocate for good policy for this syndemic that we're all experiencing across the country.
You're saying syndemic, right? Not epidemic.
Correct. Syndemic, because it is a convergence not only of overdose, but also of HIV and hepatitis C. Now, oftentimes, people aren't even aware of the hepatitis C epidemic that we're experiencing, which is really unprecedented. It is the number one infectious killer in the United States. It kills more people than the next top 10 infectious diseases combined, including. So it's an elephant in the room that nobody talks about.
I think a lot of people are aware of the fact that we've had an HIV outbreak in the state and an HIV epidemic, but that also kind of goes along with this hepatitis C outbreak. Can you talk a little bit about co-infection between HIV and hepatitis C?
Sure. Yeah. So in Scott County, there was a 90% co-infection rate.
So 90% of those people who had HIV also had hepatitis C. And then the CDC used that as one of the key indicators to look for other counties that were at risk for a similar HIV outbreak. So they are very closely intertwined. And again, those hepatitis C rates can be, again, indicative of the danger of that type of outbreak. But just in and of itself, the hepatitis C rates should be alarming, both in terms of, you know, the human cost, but also in terms of the overall economic cost that could cause states to incur. So recently, some studies came out about the total costs of this epidemic, particularly for Indiana, and $47 billion or something like that to date. And a lot of that has to do with health costs. And the remainder of it mostly has to do with costs from criminalization, incarceration, and employment as a result. So, for example, in 2016, Monroe County had 138 new cases of chronic hepatitis C. And if on average the treatment for that is $90,000, you know, anywhere from $80,000 to $90,000, obviously that adds up very quickly. It's not really talked about, and the reason for that, most experts believe, is because of the stigma associated with the population that's most at risk for new infections, which right now is 18 to 29-year-old suburban youth. Some attention is now being given to it because it's a white population that's now being affected, as opposed to historically it's not been that way.
We've seen the declaration of an emergency in Marion County in Indianapolis today with regards to the Hep C outbreak. And Indianapolis apparently hasn't had a needle exchange program. Can you talk a little bit about combating the spread of hepatitis C?
Yeah, so just to put it in perspective again, people between 18 and 29 have seen a 400% increase in admission for opioid ejection. 400% hepatitis C increase and a 622% increase in opioid injection. So this is the fastest growing of hepatitis C infection and the fastest growing injection drug using population. And what's interesting to that, and I want to say this for listeners, is this happened before there were syringe service programs. So oftentimes people think the increase in syringe use is somehow a result of syringe service programs, when in fact syringe service programs are a response to this 622% increase since 2004. So it is really, truly a mass epidemic that needs to be attended to. That being said, syringe service programs are without equal for prevention of the transmission of hepatitis C among people who inject drugs. It's something along the lines of 70% reduction in infection if it's accompanied with medically assisted therapies like buprenorphine or methadone. So we know what the response should be. Typically, there are political opponents to that response. There's no debate within public health or the medical society about the efficacy of these programs, but oftentimes there's political opposition to it. And I think that's the reason that it took Marion County so long to declare this. Their hepatitis C rates aren't, you know, necessarily out of step with the rest of the nation's, which are, again, are at epidemic proportions. But they could have declared this years ago and weren't able to because of political considerations. So we're really happy that they have declared, primarily because now with the coming of a syringe service program, you know, people's needs will be attended to, and we can decrease new hepatitis C infections.
Can you talk a little bit more about District 9, our area down here back in Monroe County?
Sure, yeah. And in fact, as I stated earlier, more people die from hepatitis C than from HIV and the next 9 infectious diseases in the country combined, right? So it's disproportionate. I don't want any money taken away from HIV, but the money and resources put into HIV prevention are disproportionate when you look at the actual effect of hepatitis C not only on our region, but on the country as a whole. So for example, I have the information about District 9 in front of me because we're going to be going and talking to representatives of District 9 tomorrow. But there are 11,000 hepatitis C infected constituents in District 9. About 7,000 of those are baby boomers. And so that would be prior to knowing what hepatitis C was. It was often transmitted through blood transfusions. Now they started screening blood, so that's not a problem anymore. But we do have a good amount of baby boomers who are infected. But the number one cause right now is from injection drug use. And that is the fastest growing group. And the reason that we can't get a hold of our hepatitis C infections is because, again, of that stigma and criminalization of something like syringes and the attendant other materials that people use for injecting drugs. So it's a huge problem, you know, to have 11,000 people infected out of a population of about 700,000. And again, I just don't think the public is aware of it. So I'm glad that Marion County not only declared, but also declared during May, which, as I said, was Hepatitis C Awareness Month.
Chris Abert, founder and director of the Indiana Recovery Alliance. Chris, is there anything?
Support for WFHB comes from MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence, individual responsibility, found locally at 812-334-4003, and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
And up next, our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Yeah, I think the most important thing to know is that we can...
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
Voices in the Streets asks your friends and neighbors how the state, county, city, and campus construction projects have impacted your daily commute.
Every day, yeah.
Every day it's there.
We know the way to get around it all.
We've lived here.
I adjust to it. It'll be over eventually. 4 or 5 years.
No, I bicycle everywhere, and it takes me 0 minutes longer. More exhaust on the streets because there's more cars backed up.
Not really. I had a little detour this morning, but didn't affect my time or anything. I've noticed that the buses have been taking a lot of detours, which is kind of confusing because it's not super clear where they're going, and it definitely has impacted my daily commute to campus.
I'm doing home renovations now, and Lowe's and Menards are both on the wrong side, and just having to get over there, and it's a big headache. It's a nightmare, yeah.
People I work with, and I've been over on that side of town, so I know it's bad.
Yes, the construction has absolutely affected my daily commute. Mostly anything to the west in any time of the day on 2nd Street and 3rd Street, and also down south, right there at South Walnut Street and Roar Road. That intersection creates an awful lot of traffic in the afternoon.
Yes, I went to a medical appointment on Liberty Drive, which means I have to go out Bloomfield Road and cross 37. Horrendous. Lots of extra time. You have to really factor in the extra time.
Yeah, the commute to work has just about doubled since they've started ripping up all the roads.
It's easier to go to way out the east side of Bloomington via Bedford or Martinsville than it is to cross 37 on 2nd or 3rd Street.
Well, it takes me another 30 minutes to get across town to get my kids and my other daughters, so it's been a big issue, especially on 2nd Street. Traffic is backed up so far that it took me 30 minutes to get home from work, and I live right by Kroger, or I work by Kroger, and I live right down by like Candlewood Suites, so it's quite a distance.
In the summer, yeah, absolutely. I don't know, I mean, if Trump passes the infrastructure bill for $1 trillion, it's only going to get worse.
You can't get anywhere. You can't go to the west side without waiting in line forever. to get across the bridge. And don't even get me started on I-69, because I live out that way and I have to fight that every day.
There are only so many arteries on the west side that you can use. You really have to be creative to certain times of day to get where you're going.
Stoplights were only letting two or three cars at a time, and people were trying to merge. And
I purposely avoid it in the morning, so I detour and I actually take 69 and then exit at Fullerton to get to work, just because it's such a headache. Like, you don't want that to ruin your day.
I think that the commute for me, because I'm like you, go everywhere and I walk around, it's terrible to see how, like, the community is affected by the traffic jams and by the construction. Unfortunately, that's going to be a byproduct of any kind of construction. This is rural, suburban, city, it doesn't matter. So people aren't really used to that kind of traffic jam and that kind of construction. So I think if there was some type of PSA or some type of, which would never happen because these are all proprietary, like private places, like, hey, you got a 10-minute grace period now or whatever, it would make it better for the understanding of, hey, we're making this place more progressive and we're building it up. And because of that, the progress might slow down some other people.
We'll be so grateful when it's finished.
Yes, we will. So
we'll be the first to complain when it's going on, but we'll also be the first to
cheer it on
whenever it's done.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Jonna Chester and Wes Martin, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Wes Martin.
Voices in the Street was produced by Jenna Janikowski. Our engineer today is Dan Withard. Our theme music is provided by Ben Lumsdane, Sat Schmadke, and Danny Graff. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, this is Ron Bronson.
And I'm Carolyn Vanderweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered independent daily news program.
Stay tuned for Big Talk with Michael Glab, a WFHB News and Public Affairs program highlighting the issues, events, and people in South Central Indiana. That's coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending New Volunteer...